Let's get to our next guest. Evan Lucas is Chief Market Strategist at InvestSmart, joining us on the line from Melbourne. So we're looking very much ahead, Evan, to Jay Powell and the pressure very much on to hit the right note in this Jackson Hole speech. How hawkish are you expecting the Fed chair to be, and how much is priced into markets already?
Yeah, hello, Julia. Most of it, I think, is there. What has been interesting over the last, particularly since the June bottom to where we are now, is this almost sanguine idea that, you know, the rate rise could possibly start to top out. And listening to what's coming out from not just Jay Powell, but across the board, they are all telling everyone that they can that rate rises are not only going to happen, they're going to happen at a very, very strong clip. They want to obviously front move the curve, and that's what they've been doing for this entire period. So that's priced in, there's no doubt. But I think the market, particularly growth and particularly risk, has got slightly ahead of itself leading into the Jackson Hole, but also leading into the 22nd of September meeting, which is, do they go 50 or do they go 75 basis points? Listening to most of them, it would be suggested that it would be the 75 more likely than 50. And there is then a reasonable gap to the one after, which is in November as well. So again, if they are going to try and front load this, they need to therefore go hard and fast. They don't have as many meetings for the rest of the year. So all that would suggest that 75 is what to go. And therefore, it's a hawkish tilt rather than anything else.
We know that they've said all along that they're going to be data dependent. We're waiting to see as well how much of an impact the labour market is in their thinking too, and this key jobs report. If you've got consumers stopping to spend as much, particularly being hit with low income shoppers, and the impact, which I know you're seeing in Australia as well, of long COVID taking people out of the workforce.
So that is what will be the data question from the point of view that so far it hasn't really shown up in non-farm payrolls. So that needs to be pointed out very clearly. Yes, people are starting to champion the idea that inflation may have peaked, the fact that we saw it come down from the, you know, low nines into the high eights. That is still, you know, 650 bips away from where they want it to be. So getting excited by inflation coming down is still a long way away from actually where it needs to be, and therefore there's a lot of work to be done. The other thing, as you said there, Juliet, about employment is that, yes, long COVID is there. Yes, there is still furloughing of certain parts of the economy across not just the US, but across the world with being out for COVID. But it hasn't actually seen any major impact yet. I mean, what I mean by that, if you look at, for instance, what is so fascinating by the whole COVID experience is that what we're saying in terms of our confidence, what we're doing with our spending are completely opposite. So we are very pessimistic across the globe about the outlook for the next 12 months particularly. But if you look at spending and consumer spending still, it's still very elevated. In fact, in some instances, it's above pre-COVID levels. And probably the part of the reason that is that travel has never fully recovered. You know, if you look at hospitality, it hasn't fully recovered. So what are we spending on? We're spending on ourselves. Things like discretionary items, that remains quite high. If you look at the credit card data across the world, that shows you that. So that impact from rate rises hasn't happened. Therefore, the impact on slowing inflation still hasn't happened. And although there is an issue around possible furloughing of workers, it's still not impacting the wage numbers yet to see that are also coming down to bring inflation down.
Let's talk about the China story, another $146 billion in pledges for this economy to try and shore up its COVID-battered economy. Is it enough to turn things around when we're seeing so many headwinds for China, the latest being the power crunch as well?
Yes, and then you're getting back to your original point for what's going on with the US, which is COVID. China's COVID policy is probably still the biggest headwind to what goes on in China. They're then also going through, you know, environmental problems. We know the droughts that are going on right now and where as well. So all of those factors are quite telling, because the other thing that's happening in about 8 weeks' time, or at least we think it's in 8 weeks' time, is the probable re-signing of the third term of Xi Jinping. So it's all coming to a head. Stimulus is needed. We know they've got massive issues around their property market. They have got very intermittent production at the moment because of COVID. And then they've also got a credit crunch going on all at the same time. China is a very interesting to watch, Interesting to listen to the commodity players in this space. If you listen to a Glencore, Rio Tinto, BHP, these major, major commodity players that are absolutely dependent on China, their opinion is that the Chinese will remain quite stable over the next 18 months. That's not what you're seeing in the macro data, but that's what they're suggesting from the micro side. So that is creating a bit of a disconnect. And I still think that actually the property crunch is the one to watch here, along with what happens post the 20th convention and how they deal with COVID zero, because there are still many, many stories that they're going to continue on with that policy for a long time to come.
Yeah, and absolutely very different to what we're seeing across other parts of the world, including here in Singapore, where we're going to see a ditching of masks for the first time in 2.5 years on Monday. Let's get to the RBNZ. Kathleen Hayes was talking to Adrian Orr at Jackson Hole. They've signalled that aggressive tightening cycle could be near the end. Is that kind of what you're seeing? And how does that flow on into the RBA's thinking too?
Yes, it is. If you look at what is coming out of New Zealand, they would suggest that they've probably done that. The one thing that the RBNZ has managed to do is that they are starting to stifle things. They are slowing down consumer consumption. And if you look at, you know, the NZ data that's coming out, it is really falling and falling quite hard. Housing is falling at the fastest rate we've seen in many, many years. Consumption's falling at the fastest rate in many, many years. And unemployment is starting to tick up. Now, that all put that together is why you're hearing from Dr. Orr that they are suggesting they're at the end of the cycle. The question's always been is whether or not they went too hard too fast and whether or not they've created a bit of a jolt and a crash scenario. That is possibly playing out. Again, if you look at results that are coming out across New Zealand and then here to us in Australia, the New Zealand businesses of most companies are the ones that have really suffered in the last 6 months, and they all point down to the idea that rate rises have caused this. So from an RBA perspective, bring it back to what goes on in Martin Place in Sydney, they are certainly very cognizant of over tightening. The suggestion is that they probably won't go as hard as what you're looking in the US or what you're looking in probably in the UK and also in Europe. So the RBA is a little bit different. I think they've gone slowly, and I'm very much waiting to see how their impacts are having. They have more meetings, so they can actually do it slower and a much more steady pace.
Almost out of time, Evan, but I know you've been looking closely at earnings, and Qantas yesterday announced that buyback plan. Does that make sense?
It makes sense to them. It doesn't necessarily make sense to the market. And what I mean by that is it's the right time, $400 million buyback when the price was at $4.25. It was at $5.80 in April this year. So it's cheap. It makes sense. They are all about trying to do capital preservation and capital management. Why I say that from the market perspective is that their service has been a massive problem for them. Plus, it doesn't look great. The government here in Australia was one of the largest bailouters of Qantas over the last 3 years from the COVID crisis. And then to be doing this at this point in time when they have clearly been supported by government doesn't necessarily sit well with the public, but it does make economic sense.
All right, Evan, great to have you on. Thank you so much. Evan Lucas, Chief Market Strategist at InvestSmart, on the line from Melbourne for us here on Bloomberg Daybreak Asia.